SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, on this holiday Monday. And a lot of times, you know, these holiday Mondays, you know, Johnny's got some holiday traditions. You know, he's holiday-centric. Johnny D., good morning.
Stevie, great to hear from you on this Memorial Day Monday. So I told Casey, I said, you're working on Memorial Day. He said, yeah, I have for about the last 10 years. I said, oh, to me, it's Memorial Day. To you, it's Monday.
Exactly. Exactly. We don't, it's not that we don't respect the, you know, the bank holiday system, but I can't even think of, you know, we take off Christmas. We take off New Year's. Well, that's about it.
You know, I have to give you an update because, I don't want the listeners to be confused. Cape May is a tradition, and we cut it short this year.
Ooh.
Thanks to the lovely weather we've been having here on the East Coast. This spring has been just absolutely horrible, and we looked at the forecast. Gail had some work she had to get done, and we cut it short. And came home yesterday, so no Cape May today. You're going to have to get your Cape May weather forecast from somebody else.
Well, I feel badly. I mean, this is the, you got how long you've been going for, as long as I can remember. That's your thing.
Yeah, well, it's her parents have a place there, and yes, it's been our thing, and we've enjoyed it, but. You know, the combination of a lousy forecast, which then the rain didn't just chase us out of Cape May. It chased everyone out of Pimlico yesterday.
Yeah.
And it turned Monmouth, you know, what looked like a great card, you know, had to be run in less than ideal conditions. And Belmont had many scratches and were off the turf. And just no matter where you look. In the Northeast, I think even Gulfstream was off the turf yesterday. I know the track was off for a while, and then it may have gone back to fast finally at some point. But and I looked at the weather map today to kind of plan out my day, which tracks I was going to look at, and it looked like Gulfstream had rain today. So, you know, you look around, looks like Churchill looks like they might be clear today. Pimlico looks like, according to what I saw, and I don't know if it's right or not, looks like they got some more rain last night or early this morning in the AM. You know, they've got that payout at Pimlico in the Rainbow Six. I think the pot's about 280,000. The 20-cent Rainbow Six, so I'll take a look at that, and we'll see what the scratches do to things. And I would have to believe they're off the turf based on being forced to cancel yesterday. I can't imagine they're on the turf today. So we'll see what those scratches look like. But yeah, this weather is really, you know, and it hurts the golf game too. It knocks me right out of commission. I'll tell you, all the things I enjoy. Get destroyed. But this is what we're dealing with this year. It's been a very unusual year. And hopefully Mother Nature will decide to cut us a break here pretty soon.
Well, at some point. Meanwhile, you roll with the punches and you make adjustments if and when you can. You look at the weekend, Johnny, and on Saturday played Monmouth and California, And I liked both of those sequences. You know, ended up doing okay actually at Santa Anita, and kind of wrapped up the day on a nice positive note. But it's nice when you, if you want to play, and there's the uncertainty, you know, in whatever region, you know, where you're focused. Yeah, I think that's one of the enduring positives of, you know, of California. The, you know, knowing that, or assuming for the most part, other than in that one range when the rains do come, but you know, you can kind of count on a clear slate and on a you know, an unfettered card.
Yeah, and I did the same thing you did. I certainly had my attention on Southern California. I'd handicapped the card early in the morning, and so when the East Coast tracks, the weather beaten East Coast tracks were winding down, I thought to myself, oh well, I still got California, and they'll be dry in Southern California. And then I also took a look at Northern California for the later races, and I played some races up there, and actually it surprised me well. So they might see some more of my ABW play today, especially based on what the East Coast looks like. But Golden Gate, I did surprisingly well. And you know, it's funny because I don't know. Sometimes people say, "Oh, you're a racing snob." They tell me, "You're a racing snob." I said, "Why do you say that?" Well, you don't play Penn National. You don't play Golden Gate. You only play Southern California. You don't play the smaller tracks. You just play the big tracks. Said, well, it's not that I'm a racing snob. It's just that that's kind of where my attention needs to be focused. It's that, you know, do you watch a lot of minor league baseball? I know probably Sid Fernando does, but generally, no. You know, the major league stuff is what's on TV, and that's what I watch. But you know, every once in a while, there's a real thrill in cashing a ticket on a 5,000 claimers, non-winners twice this year.
I looked at one thing at Golden Gate. It's funny you bring it up, because the All-American today, which includes Justify's brother.
Oh, I'd like to go through life. Poor Zenyatta's brother, and now Justify's brother. I don't want to go through life like that.
I hear you.
It's like
the older brother.
What's the old one about the brothers that have hit the most home runs in the major leagues all time?
Hank and Tommy?
Yeah, Hank and Tommy Aaron. Yeah.
No, it's a tough assignment. Although, you know, you're speaking of brothers, you had the result in Monmouth on Saturday. I mentioned the Monmouth Stake, Money Multiplier, coming back to defend his title, and Paige McKenney. But brother Chubb beat Chubbalicious, and the other brother, the third brother, Saucy Don, didn't run particularly well. But I can't remember three brothers running in one race together.
No, I can't remember seeing that happen either. That's very unusual. Very unusual. Even in human terms, that's got to be a little bit of a strange one. Although I imagine it happens more often than we know, but pretty rare. Pretty rare.
Well, you had the three DiMaggios, right? You had Vince and Dom and Joe.
Yeah, yeah. But see, I would never want to be known as Joe DiMaggio's brother. It's just not. You'd always have to feel a little bit less than.
Well, somebody's always, if there's three, somebody's always got to be Fredo. That's the problem.
Yeah, you feel Fredo-ish. But I want to see if maybe, you know, I know you need advertisers on the show, because that's what, you know, that's what greases the wheels. I understand that part of it. But I want to see if you can maybe, I don't know, maybe put the Durkin one later on in the show. Because when you put the top round roast beef, when I hear that commercial, it's only like 9 o'clock. My mouth starts to water. It's like 9:30, and I'm thinking about roast beef at night. It's a bad way to start the day. Because then I go upstairs and I'm opening the fridge. Dale said, "What are you doing up here?" I said, "I don't know. I'm not hungry. I just heard a commercial now. I want a roast beef sandwich."
I love it. Yes. By the way, speaking of Durkin, I'm glad you said that. A reminder for those of you in our area, in the Capital District, or if you're going to be swinging through Thursday at the museum, the opportunity to sit with Durkin, and he's going to go through some of his favorite Belmonts, and Jeff Carl's going to narrate and host and Q&A, and it should be a lot of fun. I last year at EquestriCon in Saratoga, I hosted the race callers segment, and it was great fun. And Durkin kind of dominated that because everybody else on the stage, you know, looks to him. But this is Durkin alone in the baby spot. And if you're going to be in Saratoga, make plans to come.
Can Durkin actually carry a one-man show, because he's kind of an introvert? Isn't he?
Yeah, you don't have to worry. You don't have to worry about Durkin. No. You can give him the ball 48 times, like LeBron.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's you get to see these special people in their professions, whatever it happens to be. It's such a pleasure to watch them work, and I really enjoy hearing people who are great at what they do on your show talk, whether it's a trainer or a jockey or a horse player. I particularly like to hear horse players talk about their methodology and talk about the art of handicapping and how they do what they do. And we all, what's funny is we all do it differently. You know, it's there's the basics, like reading the past performances and understanding what you're looking at. And of course, you know, when you bring someone to the races, you kind of show them the basics in the racing form and kind of explain it to them so they can at least understand what they're looking at. But the evolution, and you talk about this often, the evolution of the horse player, always learning kind of new angles, new tricks, new things to look for, new ways to look at it. And I love to hear other horse players talk about the evolution of their game, of how they look at certain things, you know. And yeah, here's the thing I thought about the other day. We have so many truisms, I guess we could call them, in this game. And I don't know if any of them are really factually based in fact, because, like, third time off the layoff. Everybody says that. Third time off the layoff. Well, this is third time off the layoff. Well, this is third time off the layoff. You got to watch this. It's the best. It's always the best. Is it? I don't know if it is or not. I've never subscribed to that theory, because what if the horse ran a all-time high buyer or thoroughbred figure first time off the layoff? Are you expecting the second time to be good? Well, then the third time's really going to be good. I mean, you know, what other yeah, truisms do we have that we kind of just, I haven't noticed? I haven't noticed being a groundbreaking piece of news. And I thought it would be. I really thought it would be, but I haven't noticed it. And please, correct me if I'm wrong, someone send in tweet to Steve, correct me, whatever, if you have stats, please, really. First gelding, I really haven't seen that. I mean, it's definitely a factor. I definitely love that they're now, that DRF includes it in the PPs. I love that. I love that we're talking about it. I love that the information is made public. I think that's all great. But I'm not really seeing a major turnaround. Once in a while, but not on a kind of regular basis.
Well, those are... No, I know... Well, I know exactly the reference point. And it you can file this under... I'm not going to say old wives' tales, but the long-standing handicapping maxims and you know, as you referenced, truisms that absolutely were fair categorizations. I mean, they wouldn't have become what they are if there weren't, you know, some basis in fact. But you have to, at the same time, be very cognizant of the changing landscape and the changing environment, you know, that the horsemen are dealing with. Because using third off the layoff as the perfect example, that came from an era when horsemen didn't have to worry about win percentage because nobody gave a damn. Win percentage was about as immaterial as any stat anywhere. Nobody worried about that because instead of working out five times for one start, the horseman would run, you know, three times instead, expecting maybe that third or the fourth or even the fifth run back. It was going to be when you got the A effort because nobody was worried about adding losses or non-wins to their statistics. But today, nobody runs anymore because they're, you know, they'd rather, not rather, but they're forced to train and train and train for that start because you can't, you know, you injure yourself in this era with wasted, what are perceived as wasted starts. And we've also conditioned, you know, new owners to think that they're going to win every single time their horse gets led over. I mean, which is preposterous.
You make an absolutely excellent point here, and you hardly ever do that. But in this case...
Well, it's a holiday. It's a Monday. I save them for the Monday holidays.
You make it. I'm only going to tune in on Monday holidays. You make a great and excellent point here, and the times have changed. And particularly in a place like California, Southern California, where the horse might have 10, 12, 15 works before making a start off a layoff, and then has another start, and now it's third time off. Well, if the horse wasn't fit after 15 workouts and a race, when's he going to be fit? I mean, it's not a question of fit, and that third time off a layoff was a fitness thing, I believe, which you just explained. It referred to fitness. Get him ready. Get him fit. He's not fit. Because we're going to run them off a couple works or some gallops and one or two works or three works and run them twice and tell the jock not to beat him up. You know, he's going to get beat. And everyone knew that because they looked at the PPs and that's the way the game was played.
Exactly.
Played differently now. Differently. Different game. So when I hear the third off the layoff, to me, when I hear that line just tossed out there, I believe sometimes it's a little bit of a lazy thing. You know, it's like, oh, third time off the layoff. I want to see some stats about third time off the layoff now. Yeah. I don't know. I guess Formulator or someplace, I guess you can get that stuff. But I'm not going to do it because I got a vacuum today.
Well, the other one you brought up, and I will address for a second, is the gelding sometimes frustrations. And you know, this, you know, the reporting and the you know, the locking in of the gelding date. I mean, there was one in the last 10 days. Might have been over. It was over Preakness week. I think it was over Preakness weekend. And I'd have to go back through my PPs to find it, where there was a horse starting and was a reported new gelding, and it was so obviously erroneous that, you know, that I'd rather even not know. And it really annoys people, you know, how this. There's a system, quote unquote, which is basically, you know, you got to let the racing office know when you've had a horse gelded. And I understand. I mean, people, it gets done and people forget. I don't know if there's a way to have the veterinarian do it, or, you know, the recording of it, but it's an imperfect system, and there's occasions where you absolutely know that it's been misreported, and it just drives players crazy. It's one of those things, Johnny, that, you know, there's enough things that happen that are out of control, that everybody's control, that you can understand. This feels like something that is in people's control, and yet, you know, there's one example every so often that just kind of maddening.
Yeah, I agree, and that's a slightly different conversation. I'm talking, you know,
about the performance related. I know.
Yeah, it's a slightly different conversation because there are other. Like, for example, Lasix, first Lasix, continues to be, I think, a major handicapping factor.
Still good.
I mean,
still. Yeah, you know what?
Still we should, good. I mean, that.
You know what we should do? We should have. I saw it on Instagram the other day, or not on Snapchat or something. You know, the celebrity dead or alive. We should do the same thing with. You know, handicapping maxim, dead or alive. Is it still true?
Yeah, that'd be great, and have some, you know, some of your excellent players, you know, ask them their opinion.
Yeah.
And if anyone has facts and figures or actual stats on this stuff, which, you know, it's funny because you take someone like me who's actually wagering their hard-earned money on the results of these races, and I don't know. I know everything by feel, or not, I shouldn't say everything. I know many things by feel, because I do rely on, particularly some of the things I particularly rely on. I really like Thoragraph, the information. I love the figures, the Thoragraph figures, but then Jerry Brown also includes a host of stats, an assortment of stats.
Sure.
Trainer and jockey stats and sire stats. And it's just, it's a treasure trove of information. And there are certain categories that I look at, you know, and rely on. So in that instance, yes, I have stats that I can look at that make a difference. But in something like first time Lasix, I kind of go off the feel of what is my experience, and then look at the running lines and say, oh, I see it here. I see where this horse bled. It's you know, there's a good race, and then there's a half a good race, and then the rest of the race is not so good. All right, he bled. He's had some time. He's getting Lasix. He's 12-1. Look out. You know, this could be a real, you know, form reversal. But that one, I think, still works. Blinkers on, blinkers off. I know some people love blinkers off. I have not found as much success with blinkers off as I've found with blinkers on. I'm more likely to pay more attention to blinkers on than I am blinkers off, even though it's an equipment change. And I would assume being dumb was the intent that either the trainer or the jockey figured that that's going to improve this horse's performance. I've had more success with blinkers on than blinkers off. But there are people I know who love blinkers off. They really do think that that's a... Now, are these profitable plays? I guess it varies, too, between trainer... It varies from trainer to trainer. And Thoroughgraph gives you those stats, too. First-time blinkers, if the horse is wearing blinkers. You can see what that trainer's record is with first-time blinkers. So all that statistical information helps and it makes a big difference. But I'm talking about the truisms, like we say, well, this horse is first-time blinkers today. And you know how effective that is. You know, it's like, really? Is it?
Well,
I don't know.
We've discussed, I can tell you that particularly with Andy Serling, we've had that blinker discussion, and he and I are on the same page on it, which is, yeah, the statistics, the trainer stats, there's certain things where you look and they're ineffectual, and they don't, you look at them and they really don't tell you anything. Blinking maneuvers is a really trainer centric, and there are trainers who, you know, just are really strong doing it, and they aren't doing it in desperation. They aren't doing it because a jock suggested it, whatever. They're doing it because they know they're going to get a response from the horse and that the horse needs it. And the guy who was the most glaring was Mike Hushin. Hushin was unbelievable if he was putting blinkers on. And, you know, the other stat that, you know, people are funny when it comes to this too. If it was notable to you as a handicapper first anything, and it didn't produce necessarily, don't be myopic when it comes to looking at second time those things, second Lasix, second blinkers, because what can happen with blinkers, they might put a half cup on, or a you know, pretty severe blinker, or a full blinker, and the horse doesn't perform completely to expectation, but jock comes back and says, you know what, cut those back, give him cheaters, just a little bit, cut the hole in so that they see motion in the out the corner of their eye, because sometimes if you have too severe of a blinker, you know, the horse gets a little freaked. We had that happen with Just Enough Hope. We put a full cup on her, and she was turning her head left and right. Where are the horses? She where are they? So yeah. There's adjustments. I mean, that's what this game is. That's what they're doing. They're whether it's with a new claim, whether it's with a young horse, with an older horse who isn't performing the way they used to, or, you know, it's all adjustments. It's adjusting the training to a horse that's gotten, you know, a little sour, and now you got to do something different with him and challenge him mentally and get his, you know, get him, you know, interested in racing again. You know, that's 24/7 for horsemen, and second time is can be just as effective, and yet nobody's that keyed in on those kinds of going back to the same angle that you were interested in the first time. It may be that it's going to be more effective the second time.
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point. It's even with Lasix, there's times when Lasix is given first time and the horse either runs a race and is the horse is a little tentative because the experience of bleeding last time out, now the horse is expecting to have that same horrible experience and doesn't. And so that's one case where the horse just has to kind of get used to, okay, I'm all right. It's okay for me to keep running. And then the other thing is that sometimes first-time LASIK, they still bleed a little bit through the LASIK. And so the second time, they give them a little higher dose, and it works better the second time. So, yeah, they're, you know, and when you start to get into this, and when I sit here and I start to think about things like, you know, look, when you're an ADW player, and you talked about one of the benefits of ADW, that now you can, if the weather's bad at one track, you can go to another track and move around, and the time, if you don't have time in the early afternoon, you can catch the late afternoon tracks. But what we've kind of surrendered to play that way is we've surrendered intimate knowledge of the horses on our circuit. You know, when people, when you had to go to the track to wager, I remember seeing guys make notes of shadow rolls and bits, what kind of bit the horse has, and on a rainy day, what the feet looked like, and they'd stand there and they'd mark that program, and they'd have all kinds of information. You kind of lose that when you're playing a different game. You're playing a volume game now. Well, of course we have extra information that we didn't have then, but we lost some of the information. We surrendered some of it. But there's times I think about it and think about how many little changes go on, shoeing changes, feed changes. There's so many. You start to think about, oh man, that somebody, a horse has got a chiropractor now, and he didn't have one last time he ran. He's had a chiropractor for 3 months. We don't know that. He's been in a hyperbaric chamber or whatever they put him in. We don't know all that stuff. So I think about it sometimes, and I say to myself, you know, you're an idiot to be betting. You're so much you don't know, and you're betting on the outcome of these races. But then you realize that's why they have odds, because it fills in the gaps for the stuff we don't know, and it gives you a chance, you know, to cash a nice wager, because there are odds there, and it overcomes all those other variables that you have no idea. You don't know anything about, but the odds are giving you a little bit of an edge. So I guess after time, you're relying on, look, the trainer. I mean, you talk about the percentages. Yes, we rely on certain trainers to win races, because some guys win way more than other guys. We rely on guys to lose races. There's certain trainers that I count on that they're not going to win because I save a lot of time by just, he's not going to win because he doesn't win. Okay, 3 times a year, he gets me. But for the most part, he's out. So we make some assumptions, and then the odds kind of fill in the blanks. That makes sense. I think so.
Absolutely. Totally on every front, Johnny. Johnny, before we
Memorial Day too.
Absolutely. We should remind everybody, and I'm reminding myself as I say it, we'll have the Belmont Wagering Guide, ExpressBet Belmont Stakes Wagering Guide, available end of the week. Waiting for a few final decisions, including Free Drop Billy. So get ready for get ready for Belmont.
This Monday has kind of cut our week a little bit short here. It happens not every year, but it happens a lot where we end up having to produce the guide this week. This is going to be an interesting one, because the discussion's kind of died down a little bit, I think. Do you feel that way? Like, there's the 3 weeks between the Preakness and the Belmont. The first week after the Preakness, you're kind of reliving the Preakness, and when you have a Triple Crown candidate, you're like, oh, can he do it? Can he? I don't know. And then the next week, things kind of quiet down a little bit, and then it'll pick up leading into the Belmont week. Starts to really rev up. So this week, we've got to kind of make some decisions. And boy, he didn't scare anyone away, did he?
Well, there's not going to be 16 in the gate or 14.
No.
I mean, we don't
have that. I mean, I guess in this day and age, if you get 11 or 10, 11, 12, that's a big deal. I think.
Well, I think we're looking at, I think maybe 9, right? It looks like there's about 8 under consideration.
Really?
I don't think there's more than that.
Oh, okay.
When the dust settles.
Yeah, there's a lot of dust still flying.
That's true, and it is. You know, we are 11 days out. So, well, I'll be in New York starting Wednesday.
Yeah, they've already pretty much told us that it's going to be justify Hoffberg and then somebody else. That's what they've kind of told us already. The wise guys, I guess, is what they call it. Who are these wise guys?
No, they used to be one time. You know, the authentic wise guys. In fact, we've had this debate at my website at Derby Trail. Andy's tried to explain that the meaning, you know, people have co-opted it, and that it doesn't mean what it used to mean, or that it's a little misused. I mean, at Hoffberg is not a wise guy horse.
He wasn't in the Derby, or some people say he was in the Derby. I don't think he was a wise guy horse. He ran second in the Florida Derby.
Right, exactly. No, I mean, as it, and by all rights, there was not a wise guy horse that ran well enough. I mean, to look back and identify, as it turns out. But as Andy has tried to explain to some people at Derby Trail, in its pure sense, the wise guy horse was a horse that the real serious, clever players, whether it was the Speed Boys and that type, the guys that had speed figures when nobody else had them, typically a horse that at a real price that outran their odds. That was what the wise guy horse was. Not the second right. choice right. In a classic.
Right. People I always wanted to meet, and I haven't met them yet, but I hope I do someday, is they. When I meet Ben, then I'm going to really start to cash, because, or I'm going to start to lose, because whenever I'm at the track and I hear
they knew
they like this horse, I always want to know who's they.
Classic.
Where are they?
Yes, they.
Who are they?
They knew.
They love this horse today. They love.
Well, I like when the they horse when they miss and. You get the chance to say, "Up, oh, they didn't know." They got it wrong. So
yeah. But the white guys and the they's and everybody, we're all going to be paying attention to the Belmont Stakes, and we'll have our wagering Express Bet wagering guide. It's free. It's worth twice the price, and it's going to be available this Friday. Believe it or not.
I believe it, because I got to write my entry. So
that's right. That's
so right. I better and, believe it, and I better be right and ready. Johnny, good luck today, because it sounds like you're a shut-in, and we'll look forward to being into Belmont Week when we talk.
I am a willing shut-in today. I'm looking forward to playing races from coast to coast, losing myself. And the activities. It's going to be a great Memorial Day.
Yeah, there should be. There's good. There's some good action. We're going to talk to Nick Tamaro at the top of the hour as well, and more. Jim Cassidy going to join us as well. Mike Welch to give us the latest on the potential Belmont starters. Johnny, enjoy.
Well, yeah, Stevie Tamaro and Welch. I'll listen to them. Cassidy, I can do without.
You know what? I'm going to put up that picture I took of the two of you, actually. I'm glad you made me think of that picture I took at on Santa Anita Derby Week, Derby Day, and since you're both going to be on the same day.
What a day this is.
Exactly. Mark it down. Mark your calendars. Johnny, enjoy. I'll talk next week.
Adios.
Johnny D, folks. Fun discussion. Let's take a break. Cassidy, always a pleasure, and he can't give me any guff about coming to California. This will be the one time. I spent 3 weeks, total of 3 weeks in California this first half of the year. So Cassidy, he'll tell you, take some bows probably deservedly about Sophie P. We'll talk to Jim Cassidy next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Don't wait for
in just about 10 minutes, Nick Tamro is going to join us, and we're looking for Cassidy. May have to push him back a little bit. Just conversing with Dale Romans, and he is calling Free Drop Billy likely right now, coming after the work. And, of course, you know, tomorrow morning they got to take the bandages off and take a look at him and make sure, you know, he comes back out of the work well. But as I said at the top of the show, having, you know, watched an hour and change earlier, the work was nice, and figured that this was a yes, most likely. And that's exactly what Dale said, most likely. So you can mark that one down, and we'll talk to Dale. We'll talk to Dale in New York, actually. There's something where we were potentially going to do last week, and I'll hold on to it till to New York. All right. Speaking of New York, the man that wears a Yankee cap everywhere he goes, except when he's headed to winner circles and big races, Jim Cassidy joins us, and I happen to have as a thank you for Jim visiting, I got him a new New York Yankee cap while we were out at Yankee Stadium Saturday, and he's going to particularly love it because it's those military tribute caps that, not just caps, but uniforms. I don't know if you've noticed this weekend, the whole major leagues, they're all wearing these fatigues or camouflage-y themed uniforms, and we got a couple of those at Yankee Stadium on Saturday, and I thought Jim Cassidy particularly would appreciate it, and we appreciate Jim joining us after Sophie P., who he told us about coming into Santa Anita Derby Week, and she pays dividends for Jim and Daron Pearson. Congratulations, Jim. That was a nice performance.
Thanks very much, Steve. Yeah, it was. It was, I'll tell you what. Surviving the race and then trying to survive that photo was unbelievable.
You know, it's funny. It's because I was kind of watching her. I don't know. To me, it just seemed like she's. Yeah, I mean, I thought she won, and I was surprised that it was as close as it came back.
Well. You know, at live, we thought she won, too. And then when we watched the replays, we weren't sure. And like I told them in the interview, if I had a bet on it, I would have said no, we didn't. I was hoping for a dead heat more than anything else.
Well, Kent rode her really well. And I also, you know, the way when you have three horses headlong to the wire, you know, a horse can get distracted. They focus on one side and they don't see the other one. And this is really encouraging. But I told people, Jim, that morning after you had indicated, you know, that she was, that was for the Royal Heroine, but you had the look in your eye that you had a live one. And this is obviously a mare that, you know, that's going to be a force.
Well, she, you know, her first race I thought was pretty good, you know.
Yeah.
You look back on it, you know, for her first race, she didn't get beat that far, and it was a tough field. And I thought if she moved forward from there, then she was going to be good. And I was right for a change.
Well, and it's nice. You know, it's funny because I had a conversation with Sadler earlier, and Accelerate, you know, couldn't get to City of Light in the grade two, but you know, here's a circumstance, you know, if you're gonna misfire, or if things are gonna work against you in one event and you come back later, better to have it go your way in a spot like this or the Gold Cup. I mean, to win a grade one with a mare, I mean, it makes the whole purchase, whatever you paid, it becomes moot.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, that's my man. He loves buying those mares, and so yeah, it's her value just skyrocketed. In fact, I got a couple of calls right after the race if she was available for sale for broodmare status and all this other thing. So we'll see.
Talk
about this, because I really applauded earlier in the show. I applauded, you know, what you've been able to do with this kind of horse. And there's a handful, you know, certainly McAnally historically, and you know, we know Clement and Chad Brown, and you know, there's plenty of people that get these international horses. McPeak has gone shopping South America. Talk about the process, identifying, because this is a horse that was operating on pretty much the B circuit, Musselburgh and Ayer and so forth.
Right. Well, you know, Steve, it's all about the individual and the fact that, you know, she wants to route. You know, it depends on what you're looking at and what you're looking for, you know. And a lot of these mares, they really peak in that five-year-old year. More so than they do before. So that helps too. It's a lot of decisions that go along the way. I mean, for years we just bought two, Stern, and three, and we did very well with those. And now we're into the older market. And I don't know. It just, if they get that trip, I mean, that's half the battle, you know, because there's so many U.S. horses that really don't want to go a mile plus, you know. But as an individual, she's strong. She's a big, good-looking filly. She's trained forward right after that Royal Herald, and she the light went on, and she was just really easy to train. You just got to keep the girls happy, and you know, you don't train them too hard. That's always been the way I've done it. But
it pays
as far as buying them, you know, if you see something you like, you got to take a shot at it. And a lot of, you know, a lot of times over there, you see a mare that's been off form a little bit, but, you know, they've been running in tough spots. They're carrying a lot of weight. They're carrying a lot more weight than they carry here. There's a whole lot of things that go in the process, but I enjoy it. I love going over there, looking at the horses in England and France, trying to pick out the ones that I like. The couple of Magna d'Oros that we bought have been brilliant. I guess they just don't like the soft ground in Europe because they don't seem to hold on to them too much. But they've been great here for us. I mean, we got that one filly, Ambicelli, and we had Yahilwa a couple of years ago.
Right.
And, you know, it's just, you know, it's a process, and you got to check all the boxes before you decide to go. We have an agent that we use over there that picks out about 30 or 40 of them, and then I sort through them as far as soundness and the look, and then we decide what we're going to do.
What kind of a budget?
We don't have a budget. If I have one that I tell Darren that I really, really like, he doesn't hesitate. And if I tell him I don't like one that he likes, then he won't buy it. So that's been good. That's a good part. And there's been a few that, you know, I had that one mare last year, Lucene. She is a big rock star. I mean, as good looking filly as you ever seen, but had a bad attitude. And, of course, she refused twice on me the last two times I ran her. But she had the talent. But, you know, she had some head issues that she decided the party was over. So we decided that, I guess so, girl, we'll just go breed you. You have issues, of course. But then you have pleasantries as well. And a lot of them have turned out pretty good. So.
Very much. There's also got to be a learning curve, I imagine, with some of these, in some cases, outlier stallions. I mean, Bush Ranger, you know, we see a few make their way here.
I know. But, you know, I'll tell you, the breeding program over there is stellar. It's you know, you can knock American breeding programs. We breed for sales only. They breed for racing. And I've seen some of the things they put together, and I'll tell you, it amazes me how some of these stallions, I mean, I've won stakes with horse stallions that have never run in a stake. Their father never won a stake, and they'll win in America. They like the fast ground, whatever the case may be.
Sure.
But their breeding program is second to none. Because they breed to race. They don't breed to sell.
So it doesn't matter if they don't, you know, if they've got an unfashionable head, or, you know, if there's certain characteristics physically that would be disadvantageous in the ring here, and if it's an asset, you know, if they can run, that's the only asset necessary.
Yeah, you know, and then of course the ground thing is a big thing too.
You know,
a lot of horses over there want the soft ground, and most of those Galileos they thrive on the soft ground rather than firm. I've had one or two of those that, you know, didn't quite turn out. And of course over there they're top of the line horses.
Well, Jimmy, on that topic, and this is something you could educate people to, do you note anything confirmationally that indicates a horse might, you know, whether it's a pastern angle or length of, you know, just the certain physicality that would give a hint, fast ground versus ground with give?
No, you know, you really have to do it off the form. I mean, the good to firm, if they run fairly good on the good to firm, then you know, you're okay. If they're up, and then of course, if they run in the heavy, what happens is you buy a horse that runs in the heavy and he runs good. He not only doesn't want his feet to rattle. He wants to, usually those races are a lot slower than the firm. And that's usually what happens. But as far as if physically, no, you can't say. You go off the pedigree, or you go off, like I say, the past PPs, but angles of pasterns and big feet and so on and so forth, that doesn't give you an indication of whether they're going to like the hard ground or not, or the firm ground, I should say.
Sure.
But, you every once in a while you make a mistake. You know, you get one and the jock comes back and says, man, it's really hitting the ground hard. And then you know you kind of got a problem. So then you start praying for rain. you know, like I say, it's a process. It is nothing easy in our game. You know that.
Sure.
It's an incredible game. And something new happens all the time. Some of the things you see, it's mind-boggling. But it's the greatest game in the world, because anybody could hit a home run at any time.
Sophie P., she's looking like a home run. What are you learning about her? What about distance, Jim?
Huh?
What's your feel on her adjustments distance?
Well, obviously she likes a mile and eighth, but she might get a mile and a quarter, because that's the other key too. If you get like I used to buy a lot of sprinters over there that they went five and a half, and you bring them over here, and the guys would say, well, how the hell did you get that thing to go a mile? Well, you can get them to go a mile if they'll relax. It's the ones that won't relax. Those are the ones you have a problem with. But if they'll relax in a race, going a mile and a quarter, she turned off the other day, Kent said, man, she was so easy to ride, that they'll get the trip, regardless of what the trip is. And so that's what you look for, too. You don't want one of those that's going to go out there and raise their head and just want to run off, and you got to cover them up and all that sort of jazz, because they never finish. They never relax. But we've got a lot of horses that have gone five and a half and gone a mile, 1/16. So which they never did in Europe.
Well, clearly, with the Grade 1 win, Sophie B. Certainly going to be a factor. How do you move her around from here? Angling, is she cup eligible?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'd have to. Oh God, you're making me stress now. I don't know. Well, I'm just hoping to win another race with her, either at the end of this meet or at the beginning of Delmore.
There you go. And that's all.
We'll think fine. We'll think about that. Because if Darren's not bashful, I mean, if he thinks he's got a half a shot of running the Breeders' Cup, he's running.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well,
so, but I don't want to think about that right now. That's asking me. I have a 2-year-old just won its maiden. Well, I don't know if you're going to run in the Derby. No.
Well, Baffert. That's for Baffert to do.
That's for Baffert to do. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Well, speaking of which, let me on that topic. Very much under the radar. You brought Bernina Starr back the other day as well for her 4-year-old debut, and that was a nice way to start the season.
Oh, absolutely. You know, she's always been a nice filly. And we'd run her in some tough spots, and like I said, Darren gets a little aggressive, and that's his prerogative. But we just decided to give her a break. And I had her in a race 2 or 3 weeks ago, and she started coughing a little bit, so I scratched her. But turned out she was okay. So she's back for her 4-year-old campaign, and man, the other day she really put it down. I'll tell you what. And I told Victor, I said, if you don't get this job done, because she's trained really well, I said, if you don't get this job done, I'm putting your nephew on the Bug Boy. So, Victor and I have a lot of fun together. But she's a nice, she's solid, and she brings it all the time. And of course, she runs good presses. That helps. So I can kind of space her races out a little bit.
Well, Bernina Starr back and had finished her 3-year-old year in the American Oaks, but was multiple graded stake placed coming into the seasonal debut, and you got $21 if you were paying attention, and if you were paying attention when we mentioned Sophie P back in April, certainly there were some people that liked her, including anybody.
I mean she wasn't that big a price when she was
14 to 1, and that was a good field. I mean, that was not just a good field. It was a field that was familiar to people, between the slam dunk fillies and Mopetism trying the turf, and I like Drysdale's filly, who I think is a nice filly. The Madame Stripes, who she was in a bad spot at Churchill. She was down on the hedge, and she ran a game race, ended up third. It was an exciting race.
Oh, it was a very exciting race. Yeah. Yeah. But that's in the past, Steve. We got to move forward now. But I did see the pictures of you and your lovely wife in New York at the Yankee Stadium. I was quite proud of you. You had your Yankee hat on.
Well, she did.
Well. Were you going to wear your Mets hat or what?
I'm hard pressed. I having grown up, not a fan of the pinstripes, but it is fun to go there, and I was very pleased. I got to see the Japanese kid, Otani. That was cool. The Angels and Mike Trout had a big game.
I just struck him out twice.
Yeah. Well, there, I tell you what, the story, the nicest thing about, and horse people can appreciate this. In fact, I'm glad we circled to this. because I did think about mentioning it. The best story had to do with the kid that made his major league debut for the Angels, the catcher. And he had spent 9 years in the minor leagues. He's Venezuelan and kind of a nondescript minor league career. He got a call. He ends up hitting a home run, I think, in his third at-bat. He got a hit, got thrown out at second, but he got his first major league hit. And it was really sweet. I mean, a 28 or 29-year-old guy that, you know, might not have ever gotten a chance. And even if this is the highlight of his career, it's one of those things. You break your maiden, whatever it is, you can appreciate what went into it. A guy that was that dedicated and makes the majors. I thought it was really a great moment.
Stuck in the minors for 9 years. No day at the beach.
Yep, exactly. Riding buses and everything that comes with that. But you for being our guest, I got this. I'm telling you, you're gonna love this hat. It's got the military, the camouflage, green and black, Yankee logo. You're gonna add it to your Yankee hat collection.
Are you sure it's big enough? This is a big head you're dealing with.
That is. That's a big dome you got. I'm so pleased that we went this whole segment and you didn't chide me once, because I spent 3 weeks in California this year, so already.
I know. And you see what I appreciated that. I got to see you a lot, and I mean, equality. You know, you're an Eastern guy, you know, but you stepped up this year. I must say.
I appreciate it. I was there earlier before you almost every single day. I was shocked that I beat you to the track. I had to keep Carava company.
And you did a fine job too.
Thank you, Jimmy.
He didn't one time say a bad thing about you.
Jim Cassidy, everybody. Picking horses out of nowhere and making them grade one winners. And he done it a long time. He continues to do it. Jimmy, thanks so much.
Steve, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Jim Cassidy, one of my absolute favorites. Let's take a break. A little past the top of the hour. Nick Tamaro comes in. We're going to handicap New York, and the good news is we're on the turf. And that really enhances this card, New York Showcase Day. Mike Welch will follow as well. And later in the week, Tim Layden is going to join us from Sports Illustrated. Literally interviewing Bill right now, literally this minute, is preparing a piece on Bob Baffert. And he's in Louisville, where Baffert is on hand to now watch Justify prepare for Belmont. Take a break. Nick Tamaro next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.